Hey there, everybody. It is the week of March 7th, 2011, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. We have a jam-packed show for you. We have no time to dilly-dally. We're just going to get started and cue up our first guest. If you folks, loyal listeners, have never heard of the Boston Gay Men's Chorus, you are missing out. The Boston Gay Men's Chorus is one of New England's largest and most successful community-based choruses. Now in its 28th season, the 175 Voice Ensemble is celebrated for its outstanding musicianship, creative programming, and groundbreaking community outreach. The chorus is heard live by more than 12,000 people each season and thousands more through recordings and television broadcasts. They've recorded nine compact discs, earning 4 Out Music Award nominations. On March 26th and 27th, they are performing Our True Colors, a concert aimed at supporting our teens and everyone who has been affected by bullying and intolerance. Here to talk about Our True Colors and all things Boston Gay Men's Chorus is Mark Fari, a member of the Board of Directors and a singing voice in the Boston Gay Men's Chorus. Mark, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thanks so much for having me.
How the heck are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Are you singing today?
I'm not singing today. We have the day off. We have rehearsals on Wednesday evenings and then a couple weekends over the course of the season.
So they give you some days off?
Just a couple here and there.
Yeah. Okay, that's very nice. So, Mark, for those who have never heard the Boston Gay Men's Chorus, have never seen the Boston Gay Men's Chorus, what are they missing out on?
I think there's an element of surprise that comes from us. I think a lot of folks might just think that we're sort of a hokey sort of song and dance, not really all that talented, but very kitschy and fun. And we certainly have our kitschy and fun moments, but there's a great degree of musicality that I think even before I joined, I was surprised to find when I got here. And I think what they're really missing is the opportunity to sort of have an escape. You know, we don't certainly times now are more difficult than they have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Music is a wonderful way for folks to escape and sort of step out of their little daily lives and the sort of hassles and struggles that we all may be facing. And it's a nice way to escape and sort of sit back and just enjoy themselves.
Love that. Now, what does the Boston Gay Men's Chorus mean to you, Mark?
I think first and foremost, it means family. I have had the opportunity to sort of make a family of choice out of some of these men. I've met people that will forever and ever be sort of impactful and always sort of have a special place in my heart because it's a kindred spirit. It's been a wonderful experience. And I think beyond that, it's also been a chance to become a better musician, to sort of take more lesson and take more time and sort of Ruben always is challenging us and making sure that we are working beyond what we think is our potential and beyond what we think is our capacity. And I really enjoy the challenge. So it's a good musical challenge and it's a great group of friends.
Well, let's do a little Mark, This Is Your Boston Gay Men's Chorus life, because there was a day that you weren't a member of the Boston Gay Men's Chorus, and then another day you were. So where did the decision-making process come in for you? And by the way, my hope is that this is not going to end in a story where you had to try out like 12 times and then finally they let you in.
No, just the once.
Oh, good. I like that.
I had been living in Western Massachusetts for 6 years, and I was moving back to I grew up in the Boston area, and I was sort of moving back home, and I didn't really know any gay people in the city, and I was like, well, I feel like I should probably try to make some friends, and I was like, I've been singing in choirs on and off since I was about 7, and I thought, well, there's this gay men's choir. That sounds like something that might work for me,
okay.
And so I sort of called up the office and scheduled my appointment, and I walk in all ready and prepared. I had, like, some audition pieces ready and sheet music with me, and they're like, you don't really need all of that stuff. We're going to sort of give you a little bit of a little run through and see what you can do and what you know and see how your ear works. And so I had the audition and, you know, I was feeling pretty good about myself and feeling like I did a pretty good job, and they were like, you're in. And so it's sort of been go since then. That was back in 2003.
Now, do you remember what you had to sing?
I can't remember what it was. It was one of those, like, a national anthem or God Bless America or one of those. We auditioned in a church, and the director, Ruben, actually pulled, like, a hymnal out of one of the shelves and was, like, saying, it was, like, God Bless America or one of those sort of, like, everybody knows this song thing.
I just always assume that the audition song is Suddenly Seymour. I see now that there are other songs.
Oh, it was out of Clang, Clang, Clang with a Trolley.
It's possible. Okay, so then you got in, you got the call. Did they call you up and said, you're in?
They actually told me that day.
Oh, good. Okay, so they told you that day, they said, you're in. And then you went to the first rehearsal, and you didn't know that many gay people, and suddenly there's 174 other gay men looking at you. What was that like?
Fabulous. No. it was totally intimidating and really overwhelming, but Chorus is really good at what we do, and they pair you up with a buddy. So right away, like before your first rehearsal, you get an email or a phone call from somebody who's, like, for all intents and purposes, a complete stranger. And they're like, hi, we're friends now. And you come, we'll meet before rehearsal, and we'll sort of get to know each other, and that way you don't have to sit alone, and, you know, they sit next to you and sort of help you, and they introduce you around. And so it was intimidating a little bit, and then my buddy was named Stacy, and Stacy took really good care of me and introduced me around, and in no time it was, like, just part of the clutch, if you would.
Stacy was a quality buddy.
Yes, Stacy was a great buddy.
Now, have you been a buddy to any new members?
I have, yes. I have, and I'd like to think I'm also a good buddy, but I'm not sure. I'll have to ask them when I see them.
We'll check for you and get an update for you on next week's show.
Excellent.
Now, you've been in the Chorus then for going on 8 years now. Talk about some of the cool places that you have performed.
So, some of the best places we got to sing at Symphony Hall here in Boston, which was amazing. The acoustics were absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
And we were fortunate enough to sing at Gay Pride in Berlin, and we sang on the main stage, and there were 700,000 people in front of us.
Wow.
I'd like to think they were all listening to us, but some of them could have been having side conversations, who knows. And we got to go to Poland, and we were actually the first openly gay performance group in all of Poland, and we were protested, and it was kind of fantastic, because, you know, it's not every day you get to get protested.
It's a great feeling.
It is. Like, wow, like, you're so upset by just the fact that I want to come here and sing a couple songs. They had, like, signs that were very sort of graphically accurate about what people do with each other.
Oh.
And with the big slash around them, like the red circle and the slash. And I was like, huh.
Huh.
How do they know that's what we do? And why is that the representation they chose to put on their placards? But
wow, I kind of want one. I would laminate it and put it up in my office. That's fantastic.
Yeah. But I think probably the best places we've ever sung in this is all the high school outreach we've done.
Yeah.
I guess 5 years ago, maybe more, I don't remember exactly how long, the governor of Massachusetts has always had a sort of a program for young, gay, and bisexual, lesbian, transgender youth.
Mm-hmm.
And there was sort of this council that the governor's office had always funded. And when a different governor came in and defunded that, it became Friends of the Governor's Office of Friends of Gay, Lesbian, Transgender Youth. And so it cut a lot of the funding for the GFAs and a lot of the supportive work that is being done in the school systems. And we decided that what we were going to do in response to that was sort of do some fundraisers for them. So 2 or 3 times a year, we go into a high school and we sing a performance and we donate our sort of normal performance fees. And all the ticket sales go to support the student groups. And it's also really fun because all the moms bake, like, cookies and brownies and all those things.
Aww.
And I'm not a good baker, and my mom's not around the corner baking for me anymore. So it's good to get good baked goods. And then that whole feeling of being able to sort of know that what we're doing, what I love to do, what's fun for me, is also a way to do some support for our younger folks. It's a way to sort of, it's a great combination for me. I love to sing. It's been something I've been doing my whole life. And, you know, I have some strong commitments to sort of social justice issues, and so this is a great way to sort of do what I love and also sort of create the change that I think the world needs to have.
Love it. Now, I assume you have some sort of day job.
I do have a day job. I am the assistant director of a community wellness center for gay and bisexual men with the focus on HIV prevention and sexual health.
Look at that. I wasn't even planning on talking about that, but let's talk about that work. How is that work going these days?
It's always interesting.
Like, yeah.
They certainly keep me on my toes.
I bet.
You know, I think that there's a lot of folks out there that are doing some really good stuff for themselves, taking really good care of their bodies and their souls, and taking really good care of themselves. And some other folks just really struggle to make choices that are going to reflect some long-term goals that might sort of become impacted by some choices they're making today. And people get lost in today and forget that everything that we do today is going to impact what happens to us tomorrow. And, you know, some folks are just sort of in a great place and some folks continue to have some struggles. And
yeah.
I enjoy working with both of those kinds of folks because some folks make my day really easy and some folks sort of remind me why I do the work that I do.
Oh, so there's quite a bit of bleed then between the work that you're doing during the day and certainly your work with the Gay Man's Chorus.
Yeah, I sort of am the gay agenda. It's this thing I'm working on. So
you really should have that on a t-shirt there, Mark. It should be right there, Mark, gay agenda. Yeah. Well, that's...
I'm actually hand-stitching it right now.
I love that you can multitask. Now, let's go with the assumptions, and this is where you just have to disprove it. You got 175 gay men getting together every Wednesday night and some weekends. I'm assuming there's some sort of drama going on. I was looking at the website trying to figure out, now, who's bringing the drama? And my money is on Ken Hirschkind or Ted Williamson. And I imagine that I don't know. I just was looking at the website, and I'm thinking it's them, and that every Wednesday you have to say, Ken and Ted, we got to focus on the music now. We can't talk about other things.
Actually, I don't know if you randomly selected those people or if you did some research. I actually am friends with both of them. So they don't bring drama as far as I can tell. There really isn't a lot of drama, which I think is kind of great. And, you know, it's really sort of low-key. I mean, there's definitely sort of social circles. I mean, you know, you see people once a week, and so you sort of connect with, certainly can't talk to 175 people in the 15-minute break we have.
Right.
So there's definitely sort of like social circles, but I don't think there's drama. I don't think that there's anybody actively sort of harboring negative feelings toward, I hope there isn't. I mean, I think the thing is we're all grown-ups.
That's a good thing.
And there comes a point in time, yeah, we're all grown-ups for the most part. And there comes a point in time when this is just about the music, and this is just about sort of having a good time. And I'm hoping for everybody else's sake that there's not drama that's going to ruin it for folks.
And I hear what you're saying. My money is still on Ken Hirschkind and Ted Williamson.
I'll let them know that. Okay. I'll pass that message along.
Did my research. Little shout out there to Ken and Ted. It kind of increases the listenership of the show. So we got Our True Colors coming up at the end of the month.
Yes.
Tell us all about it.
So this is one of those concerts that's a great mix of sort of what our mission is. Our mission is to change, creating tolerance and change through the power of music. And so this is a great way for us to sort of tell our stories. And it's not like this long, downtrodden life. It's not like this awful, depressing. It's a great mix. I mean, you know, we open with some really fun music and some pop music. We're covering, like, Cyndi Lauper and Katy Perry and Christina Aguilera, and so, you know, and then it just sort of talks about it's the struggles. It is like what the gay movement has been, and you know, I think that the gay core movement has been sort of underrepresented in what we think about as our gay history, and mm-hmm. not that a whole lot of folks are spending all that time learning their gay history, but
right.
I think the gay core movement is something that's sort of been passed over and not really been given the credit, because some of the first sort of outwardly gay people and activities were these men who got up to sing on, you know, the Gay Men's Chorus, their first concert. Our first concert was outside in the Boston Commons.
Oh.
And it was scary for folks, and people were afraid they were going to get, like, harassed or violence sort of set upon them. And, you know, like, that was sort of the first stuff. And so there's talk about sort of, you know, claiming ourselves and claiming our lives and being open and being visible and being proud and sort of what that journey was and sort of how we can sort of continue that. And then as we have, I mean, we need to acknowledge that we've come a great deal as a community in the last 30 years. There's been major strides towards much more inclusion and much more sort of political and sort of legal safety. But at the same time, there's still so much more to go. And we look at last fall and sort of the trauma that was sort of beset upon, I think, a lot of folks in the nationwide sort of, mm-hmm. it was the first time for a lot of folks to really get their eyes open to the percentage or the fact that so many teen suicides are related to GLBT issues.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that's bullying and part of that's identity and part of that is sort of external and some of that may be internal battles for the individual who feel it at that point in time, there's no reason for them to carry on. And so we need to continue to work on what we have, what we want, and in order to protect the next generation of those sort of young gays who are coming up. And this concert really touches on that. I mean, it touches on what happened. It there's a nod to Tony Kushner and Angels in America.
Yeah.
One of the songs we're singing is the texts from from Angels in America. It's like one of the last scenes. It's like, it's from Perestroika, and it's just phenomenal. And I mean, I think it's, we as a community have to own that the 80s and 90s are pretty messed up from really awful things happened in our community, and not that we want to sort of drag those out and relive all that and sort of rub everybody's face in that, but I think that it would have been sort of short-sighted for Ruben to not include some information or an acknowledgement that we as a community really suffered.
Yeah, perspective. Perspective is a good thing. Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, then it goes, we talk about True Colors. I mean, we have to do this and do that for True Colors. Our concert is called True Colors, and it's a beautiful arrangement, and it's great, and, you know, and then the whole second act is a piece that was written by a gentleman named Jay Kowarski, and it's called Prayers for Bobby, and it's a pretty amazing piece of work. For people who don't know, there was recently a movie that was released under the same name, Prayers for Bobby, and there's also a book, and it's the story of a mom whose son, she was raising her children very sort of hardcore Christian, very sort of fundamentalist Christian, and it didn't go so well when they sort of came to the realization that her son was gay, and they tried to do a lot of that sort of ex-gay therapy, and they just were continuing to pray over him and for him to help him change, or in the hopes that he would change. And Bobby ended up ending his own life, and the story from there is his mother's journey of sort of figuring out what that was. Why did that happen? Why didn't God sort of fix her son, and her coming to the realization that it wasn't that God had to fix her son, that her son was perfect just the way he was, and she had to do some fixing of herself. And she went and did a lot of sort of just soul-searching and sort of spiritual research, if you would, sort of looking and talking to various religious leaders around her and sort of talking about why is this in the Bible and why are we so fundamentally sort of standing so strong against homosexuality. And she's had a different point of view in her life at this point. And through the work that she did, she was actually fundamental in the forming of GSAs in the state of California, the Gay Straight Alliances for Students in the state of California. And so it's sort of this journey of a woman who took what is tragedy and what was personal trauma and was able to turn that into something that was much more profound and was able to protect other folks.
Wasn't it Sigourney Weaver playing her in the movie?
Yes, it was Sigourney Weaver.
I did see that movie. Okay.
Yeah, I believe it was the Hallmark Channel. So
yes.
You totally just outed yourself on your gay radio show.
I'm sure I have no idea what you're talking about, Mark. And if you think outing myself on the gay radio show is a new thing for me. All right, so this is a big concert coming up. This is a big deal.
Yeah, we're really, really pleased and excited. And so we have it on the 26th and 27th of this month. And we're looking forward to sort of being able to share this story and sort of have this sort of retrospective of what our lives are as individuals and what we have been as the community as we sort of moved out of in the post-Stonewall era.
Okay. I'm actually going to be in Boston on that Sunday, so I will definitely try to check out this concert.
Well, now, I will expect to see you in the audience.
Yeah, well, Laura DuVaux will yell at me if I'm not there, so I will.
Yes, she certainly will. And a shout-out to Laura DuVaux. How much do I love her?
How good is she?
She's the best.
She's the best. She's the best. Look at that, another listener. Now, my partner is in a chorus, and he certainly comes home sometimes when they introduce new music. Oh, I'm going to get him in trouble now. And he says, oh, God, really? That's what we're singing? Have there been moments where some songs have been introduced to you all that will be in your repertoire, and your immediate reaction is, really? We're going to do that?
I could never say that was true. Every song that the director picks is perfect. He's a genius. How's that for
an answer? Oh, you're the best buddy ever.
Thanks.
Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Favorite song that you have sang in this chorus? Your top three. Top three over the past 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Here we go.
I would think everything in the Gershwin concert. We did a Gershwin concert that was absolutely phenomenal.
Okay.
So I would say that every piece. I can give you top three concerts. I can do that, but I don't know about top three songs.
Okay.
God, even top three concerts is hard. I think the Gershwin concert was amazing. I think we did a show years ago called Night Passage, which was sort of a historical fiction-y sort of take on the night that Oscar Wilde was arrested and how gay men boarded this ferry and left their homes and lives as they knew them for fear of being arrested. And it was just sort of this awesome, amazing sort of dark piece. It was great. And then I think the Bette and Barry at the Bav show. We did a show that was a sort of all Bette Midler and Barry Manilow.
Oh.
And I never realized how much I loved Barry Manilow until I was like, wow. I love these songs. And it was a really fun concert. And, I mean, they both have such great songbooks to choose from. And there were great performances and dance numbers, and it was just fantastic. So I think those are my top three concerts.
That's awesome.
Top three songs.
Well, now, I was standing outside the Poland concert holding a sign, but I heard good things about the Poland concert on the inside.
You have really good penmanship.
It was more about my artistic skills. I was the one that drew the slash through the through the depiction.
Wow, that was really good.
Oh my God, I really want to go to the Bette Midler and Barry Manilow concert.
Yeah, you missed a good one.
Oh.
That was probably 3 years ago. It's fantastic.
Now, what is the age range in the Boston Gay Man's Chorus about?
18 to, you look like, I'm not actually how old you are, but I think our oldest member is 78 or 79, and I'm not going to say his name because I could be wrong. He could be a different age than that. I believe he's that.
I assume it's either Ken Hirschkind or Ted Williamson.
Yes, it's actually both of them.
I'm just going to keep going back to that. Well, but that's really important to have these different age ranges, because I think that there really aren't a ton of intergenerational opportunities in the LGBT community. And it's something that we talk about often on the show over the past couple of years of, we really do need more of these opportunities, more of, you're not automatically handed down gay history, just as you're not automatically handed to someone else, this is what gay youth are struggling with right now. So I would assume that even in that brief 15-minute break, what a great, great chance it is for different generations of gay folks to interact.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. That sort of bleeds into my personal work and my personal life and my professional life. So yeah, I totally agree with your sort of take on the need for more opportunity to speak with folks that just aren't like me, but have had different experiences than me, because that's going to sort of, A, it's going to enrich my life and sort of make me a sort of broader understanding of the world. And then also it's a sort of way to connect with the history of my community. So I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, this is good stuff. Where can folks go to learn more about the Boston Gay Man's Chorus?
They can go to www.bgmc.org. Or if you Google Boston Gay Man's Chorus, it might get you there. It's the same. There's information about an upcoming concert and our upcoming fundraisers and a little bit of a history about the chorus and sort of who we are and what we do, and talks about our staff members. And so, yeah, it's a great way to get to know us.
And a Facebook page as well.
Yes, we are also on Facebook, and we also Twitter, and we use as many sort of social media as we can to make sure we're getting the word out there. So totally follow me on Twitter, because I don't really Twitter, though. It's not me.
Who's got the time anyway? Well, I mean,
Who has that many interesting things to say in 140 characters?
It's good. It's good stuff. But look, we talk, the whole theme of this show, as it has ever been in the history of This Show Is So Gay, is to talk about how do you folks use your voice to make a difference. And my gosh, there is no more literal example of using your voice to make a difference, to build community, to raise awareness, than what you and the rest of the Boston Gay Man's Chorus are doing. We, on behalf of the entire community, we applaud your work and we applaud your use of voice. It's really an effective tool.
Thank you so much. I can't even tell you what a pleasure it is for us to get up, and we wouldn't be able to do any of what we do if there weren't people to sit in the audience and listen and share our experience with. So we all thank everybody who comes to our shows and just shares the experience that is making music and joy and emotion and laughter. We can't thank the audience enough for coming out.
Now, because you outed me about the Hallmark Channel, I feel in turn it's appropriate to out you. Did we not just deflower you to your first radio podcast experience?
Yes, you were totally my first, and I don't have a lot of firsts left, so thanks so much for being one.
First is always memorable. Mark, an absolute pleasure having you on the show. My best to the entire Gay Man's Chorus, and of course, to Ken Hirschkind and Ted Williamson. Keep doing what you're doing and keep using your voice. You're doing good work, sir.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on the show. Well, I'll see you at the concert, correct?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks. All the best, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sad eyes. Don't be discouraged, though I realize it's hard to take courage in a world full of people. You can lose. inside of it all, and the darkness there inside you makes you feel so small. But I see your true color shining through. See your true colors. That's why I love you so. Don't be afraid to let them show your true colors. True.
Welcome back to This Show Is So Gay, everybody, where you can get in touch with us by sending us an email at thisshowissogay@aol.com and also stroll on over to our website at thisshowissogay.com. Hear past podcasts, look at upcoming guests, learn about the host, do all those fun things. All right. But with all that, it's time to welcome a guest. Hey, second guest, yes. Are you there?
Yes. Hello.
Let me introduce you. You ready to be introduced?
Absolutely.
Okay, this is a good thing. Dallas Dubois is a Broadway drag dance diva, a Glammy Award-nominated drag performer. Dallas was voted most popular and entertainer of the year at Miss Fire Island pageant. I did not place in that pageant. I just want to put that out there. And Danny Dallas is also a fearless HIV activist and spokesperson. Dallas Dubois, a.k.a. Danny Logan, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, how are you? I'm doing very good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty darn good. What's going on in New York City this fine day?
It's raining right now profusely, and I'm standing in the middle of Times Square trying to score a ticket to see Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's the newest show on Broadway. I saw it in the West End, and I'm being a drag queen. I gotta go support my drag musical.
So. Oh, I definitely want to check that. Well, we have so much to talk about. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Well, now, for people who don't know, who is Dallas Dubois? Where did she come from? How was she raised? What's her story?
Oh, so many questions. Okay, so Dallas, let's see if I can cover this all. Dallas Dubois was born about 2.5, almost 3 summers, 3 years ago now, in Fire Island. She is on a dare just to do drag once for the hell of it.
Wow.
And we go out and party hard in drag, and someone asked me to do a show and just do a performance number in one of the drag shows. And I said, sure, absolutely, why not? And the rest is kind of history. But it started to come up, and basically, here I am now.
And how would you describe Dallas?
She's vivacious, and she's like a mix between old and new Hollywood. She's sexy, but she's fearless at the same time. Dallas tries to define and also get rid of all boundaries that the young people or stereotypes that is usually equated with drag.
Nice. Now, what are the differences between Dallas and Danny?
When Dallas is in drag, there's a little bit more fearless behavior that comes with, you know, putting a wig on.
Uh-huh.
When they had those people who tried to scale the New York Times buildings a few years ago, I thought it would be a brilliant idea to try and do it myself for publicity.
How'd that go?
I didn't end up doing it because I thought, you know, if I'm wearing heels, there's a big chance I could slip. But, you know, if I didn't have that wig on, I probably wouldn't have thought of that as an idea or even, you know, ascertain the idea of doing that.
Nice.
And the only other thing is that I would say the femininity aspect of drag definitely comes out more when I put the wig on. When I take the wig off, I'm very, very much more reserved, not introverted, but a lot more masculine than usual.
Nice. Now, you mentioned going to see Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and supporting drag. What do you think is the state of drag these days?
What's the state of it?
Yeah, what's the state of drag for people? Because there's so many communities, and we every now and then will have someone from RuPaul's Drag Race on the show, or Sherry Vine's been on the show, and we talk a little bit about all these different communities in the U.S. We would say, for the most part, a lot of communities don't have drag. What are they missing these days for communities that don't have drag?
They're missing the creative aspect of it all. The fact that, like, there's endless amount of boundaries. I mean, there is no boundaries, pretty much. You know, the possibilities are endless. It's limitless. A good friend of mine, Mimi, I'm first, actually, from RuPaul's Drag Race Season 3, said it really best. They were, Nick's Magazine here in New York interviewed her about what her favorite challenge was from the show, and she said it was probably the sci-fi one, because sci-fi, much like drag, is limitless.
Right.
You know, there are no boundaries. Like, you can go as creative as you can and as out there as you can. And if you don't have that outlet available or readily available to you, then you kind of don't know what, you can't really grow as a performer, as a creator, as an artist. And I feel like if those communities and those places that don't have drag accessible are really missing out on a lot of growth just with themselves and self-identification. That's why I love New York so much. That's what it kind of, New York's personifies creativity and an artistry.
Now, one of the things that Mimi said, and you're touching on it a little bit on the show, was Mimi said that New York drag is a lot different than drag in other places. Have you had the opportunity to see drag much in other parts of the country?
Yes, and I agree with her completely. I performed in San Francisco and Philadelphia. I'm actually going to Virginia tomorrow to perform with my good friend Daniel Gray. I can't speak on Virginia, but I can speak on some Florida and those places as well. In New York, you have to know how to carry your entire show by yourself for an hour and a half to 2 hours, much like, you know, Liza Minnelli at the Palace on Broadway. Like, you know, you have to know how to captivate an audience and keep that audience for that hour and a half to 2 hours that you're on stage. with maybe only that same costume that you started out with in the beginning to last to the end.
Right.
And a lot of other shows and a lot of other drag performers in every other city that I've been to are used to these cast ensemble shows where they have the opportunity to change their look, change their hair, change their dress, change their shoes. And, you know, and that right there kind of shows the difference between a New York performer and really anywhere else in the country.
Nice.
Not belittling any other place. They're two different styles of performing, but I mean, it definitely teaches you how to really, really push your talent and be as versatile as you possibly can.
Now, you get the opportunity to participate in a lot of different events, and we'll talk about Daniel Gray in a couple seconds, but let me hit on some other cool things that you do. What are the Hookie Awards?
Oh, I'm so excited to be hosting, co-hosting, actually, with Leslie Jordan. Not sure if he's the little
of
guy.
Of course.
Leslie from Will and Grace.
We love Leslie.
Love Leslie. The Hookie Awards are exactly what they sound. They're an awards ceremony or awards show that are dedicated to celebrating and commemorating the efforts of escorts in, majorly New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I think pretty much anywhere. Through rentboy.com.
Nice. Okay. Do you already know what you're going to wear?
I don't know. I've been thinking about different outfits.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I should go fetish-wise or if I should go in a ball gown, because I think it would be the exact opposite of everyone else that will be there.
I vote ball gown.
I vote ball gown, too.
And then keeping in mind that this is a family show, what are WTF Wednesdays?
Well, this is a family show. Finish this off, but I'll give you, it's what the, you know what.
Okay.
Pretty much it's because you walk out of the bar going, what the hell is that? It could be the amount of alcohol you've had, it could be how I did my show, it could just be like, there are too many people in the bathroom at one time. You never know how, you know, you interpret that, but that's exactly how it goes.
And that's at Barracuda?
Yes, the Barracuda Lounge in Chelsea, the premier drag bar in New York.
Yeah, hey, I worked there. I got fired from there.
I didn't know this.
Of course. Come on. I was a New York guy through and through. But as it turns out, they like their bartenders to actually be serving drinks and not talking the whole time. And I did not get that memo.
Oh, no, that's not good.
I was not helpful. Just want to put that out there.
No.
Sorry, Barracuda. Just want to put that out there to them. And now, what are you working on with the fabulous Daniel Gray?
Well, Daniel Gray is doing a show in Richmond, Virginia at the Camel Club tomorrow, Monday. And I'm going to be guest starring for him. Kind of like the opening act. I'll be his Robin to his Katy Perry.
Nice.
Or who else opened? I don't know. Who opens for who? I don't know. I've never been to a concert before, believe it or not.
I love Robin. That's a good opening act, I would say, for Katy Perry. I would go more for that. And is this part of the Rainbow Rocks tour?
This is not, but this is something completely different. But, you know, Daniel is responsible for organizing that, too. So that's coming to a city near you.
This is so great. Now, I did, last night, I sat down and I watched the episode of What Would You Do?
Yeah.
That you were recently on. So for folks who have not seen this, and I'll post a link up on our website, we have a lot to talk about with this. So tell everyone what I'm talking about.
Well, I have the opportunity and the privilege to perform, but really just to be on this show on ABC called What Would You Do? And, it's a show that tackles different things, ethical issues and you know, they put these people in these in-camera situations where they don't know they're being videotaped, but it sees how they react to people who are facing prejudice, mm-hmm. harassment, any type of adversity, and seeing if people would react to what they're being faced with.
Right.
And this one tackled primarily or definitely HIV and AIDS awareness and, prejudice and everything that comes with it, stereotypes, et cetera. And I left the wig at home and the heels at home and decided to just do it as myself because I am a very vocal, outwardly proud, HIV positive individual in the gay community. So I decided to do it, and it was very interesting. We filmed it in Lyndhurst, New Jersey, which is not far away from the Manhattan skyline at all. You actually could see it.
Oh yeah, no.
The diner.
That's where I grew up. I grew up right around there.
Yeah, so, and, you know, and it put people in the situation where I was being harassed by a patron and that was dining in the actual diner as well, who was an actor, but no one really knew about it, and he was provoking the situation and being the antagonist and seeing if anyone would speak up.
Well, let me tell you this. I had to pause a couple different times. I couldn't, I'm being very upfront with you, I couldn't watch it all the way through because it was so painful and poignant, and I really struggled with it, and I was trying to put myself in your shoes, and I know, you know, it's an acting gig, but it's also kind of your life, and I so appreciated that they took the time to speak to you as not an actor, but as someone who's living with HIV to say, well, no, there's a lot of ignorance out there, but were there parts of that that you had to just pause, or this is just, how did you barrel through all that? I couldn't do it. I had to pause.
Well, we did it about 17 different times that day. What happens is, you know, we have earpieces in our ear, the three actors, you know, including myself, and we listen to the producer and the director who just tell us, you know, what we should do next. Should we stay in this position? Should we move to our right, move to our left? Should we ask somebody a certain question to kind of move the situation along to see if anyone will react even further.
Mm-hmm.
And the first few times, I was so completely nervous that I did not know what to expect. Nothing scripted. There was literally not one added part of the actual situation other than the two actors and myself. So anything that happens is literally real and honest.
Yeah.
Here. So I was very nervous for the first two times, and then I got the hang of it. You know, they do the segment, which lasts, no joke, about 15 minutes. Then we reset, and we go again after about 10 or 15 minutes. We did it about 17 different times that day. And everything was going good. You know, I heard, like, one or two people say some somewhat ignorant things, but I was, you know, I was okay with it. And I was very excited to see that there's so many people who were speaking up on my behalf.
Oh, yeah.
Until the very, very, very last one of the day, which is actually the last segment that they showed in the two segments that we shot on ABC. Which was that guy who refused to shake my hand. And that was the one that was really the kicker.
Yeah.
After it happened and I was looking around at the producers and the crew and making sure, like, what I was seeing was real and, like, I wasn't just imagining this.
Yeah.
They kind of gave me about 10 to 15 minutes to decompress, like, by myself and just go sit down and, you know, and kind of just think about what just happened because they themselves were completely shocked as well.
Yeah.
So it was a little strange, but... even they were shocked as well. So it kind of set a different tone. Everything was great and progressive, and then the last segment of the day was like, wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say... first of all, I was just... I mean, look, we've never met, but I was just so proud of you. I don't know why. I was just so overwhelmingly proud of you for just participating in and getting through that. And my favorite part was at one point a woman... said, you know, came over to you and said, don't even listen to this guy. Don't worry about it. And then she said, why don't you come eat with us? And it was funny. My partner was in the kitchen and I said, yay. And I had headphones on. He said, what are you watching? I was just so excited that she said, come sit with us. I thought it was a really nice moment.
Oh my God. If I was more emotional, that day I was trying to be really strong just for everybody that I was representing. I probably would have started crying.
It was a really nice moment. And there was that, it was funny because I figured you had to have had an earpiece in or something like that. You're like, wait, am I supposed to go eat with them now? But you clearly wanted to. So it was really, and I just said, go eat with them. And it was nice. I liked it.
Yeah, I kept saying no, 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 because the director hadn't told me, you know, otherwise. And then you could kind of see me change my thought process. And I was like, okay, I'll go eat with you.
Yay!
That was because the director said, go sit with them. And I did. It was such an incredible experience and something that I would never, ever, ever change or, you know, regret in my entire life. I was so happy I did it.
So proud of you. So proud of you. That makes such a, it makes such a huge difference. And I hope you know that. So just tell us real quick, as a fierce AIDS activist, what information do we have to get out there right now? I mean, look, it's 2000. It is now 2011. What information do people not have that they still need to have?
We know one thing that I would say that definitely needs to be readdressed is the fact that people in our generation, especially, you know, I'm not sure exactly the demographic that really is targeted here for your station. I'm going to guess based on the name that's mostly going to be, you know, gay people or gay supporters mm-hmm. and their friends. I mean, the one main thing is that people assume in the younger generation, like 18 to 21, I'd say, or even 16 to 21, that, like, you know, this is a sustainable disease, which is true. It's treatable. It's not curable, but it's treatable. But you know, people don't talk about it enough anymore because not as many people, fortunately, are not, you know, passing away from complications
right.
or, you know, et cetera, that are involved with this disease. So therefore, more people are becoming infected, and it's just becoming a bigger epidemic again like it was when it first hit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say that, you know, always, you know, be safe, protect yourself, know who you are becoming sexually active with, and just be more careful and more alert. And the second thing is I'd say is that regardless if you, anyone chooses to believe it or not, there are so many more people than people think that are directly or indirectly affected by this, HIV and AIDS, you know, be it a friend, be it a classmate, be it a coworker, be it family. And, you know, people take for granted that, you know, life is really long and prosperous when it could be really short and sweet. And, you know, just to be more open and less ignorant about things, because people deal with situations like this each day in and day out. So
there you go. You, sir, are wise beyond your years. You know that, right?
Yeah, I grew up pretty fast.
And that's really important. And I don't mean to out you, but you are on the younger side. And I think that there's so many people that are frustrated, like, where are the younger voices? And they are there. We just actually have to listen.
Yeah, you know, I think there's more eager people that want to speak up than are being actually heard.
Yeah.
Because there's not an outlet for it.
And, exactly.
You know, that's why I jumped at this opportunity to do this. I was scared. I wasn't going to use that word because it's a family show, but I was scared beyond myself to do it and nervous about the outcome. But then once I saw it, I was like, I couldn't tell you how happy and excited I was that I did do it. Because I got so many amazing emails and messages from people that I don't even know, complete strangers, that were thanking me for doing what I did. And I can't even brag about saying that I did this for selfish reasons because I didn't. I did it for those who can't or don't want to speak up.
Huge. That's a whole different demographic. Now, did your family get a chance to see this, and did they have feedback?
They did. To this day, I keep asking them. I said, has anyone, you know, come up to you at, you know, at work, or has anyone spoken to you about it, saying that they saw me? And they said no, but my family was so proud of what I did, and I am too.
and you know what? I am too.
So, thank you.
Now, where can folks go to learn more about all the cool things that you are doing?
I'm on Facebook.
Yes, you are.
If you want to see my drag persona, it's Dallas Dubois, D-U-B-O-I-S. And I'm always in New York City, and I'm in Fire Island, and I'll be coming to a city near you, I'm sure, definitely soon, especially San Francisco. I'll be there for Folsom Weekend in September.
Nice.
And for more information, I guess, about myself and what I did for What Would You Do, and just in general, to, you know, if you have any questions about people living with HIV, or just where you can find out more information about getting educated on it, I'm on Facebook under Danny Logan, under a Facebook page for Public Figure. So definitely check that out.
Awesome. Now, for folks who have never been to Fire Island, what are they missing out on?
Oh, they're missing out on everything. They're missing out on a grand old gay time. Come out to Fire Island if you wanted to be able to let loose and be yourself and not care about anyone else, you know, judging you, because this Fire Island, especially Cherry Grove, is a place where the eclectic group of misfits, if you will, which none of us are, but, you know, we are a little bit of the sub-community, being gay or being whatever, can all go and have a great time together.
Nice.
Celebrate life.
I've only been once, so I need to get back.
You gotta come back.
I haven't been for like 8 years.
Gotta come back.
I know. I went when I was 25, and I have not been back since. So I gotta go check it out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what? Anytime you want, you call me. Let me know, and I will get you a nice housing.
I'm on it.
come watch me jump in a pool like a schmuck for like Saturday in the afternoon.
But I love that. I loved seeing, like, on someone's post, it said Fire Island's own Dallas Dubois is on the show. And I thought, oh, well, that's so nice that you have this community and that this community has adopted you. And I want that. So that was great to see.
Yeah, it's amazing that a community as small as Fire Island that's pretty much built upon people from New York City and other places, but New York, kind of has its own world there that doesn't shut off after the summer, and you go back and it's like you've never left.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about that island.
Love it.
You can just pick up where you left off from the year before.
Oh, man. Well, I will definitely be sure to check it out, and I'll have to. I haven't shown my face in Barracuda in a while, but I'll have to go back there at some point soon.
Certainly. I'm there every Wednesday at midnight. Come say hello.
Awesome.
Hey, queen.
Dallas Dubois, Danny Logan, you are entertaining, but you are also making a huge, huge difference in this world. So proud to have you on these airwaves.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy that I did it, and I'm so happy to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Keep doing what you're doing.
I will. And I'm going to go see Priscilla and think of you.
Have a great time. Tell that Daniel Gray we said hello.
We definitely will. Hopefully you'll hear from us for the Rainbow Rocks tour.
Awesome. All the best.
Likewise. Have a great day.
Bye.
Thank you.
Look at that. So fun. Dallas Dubois, Danny Logan out there entertaining, out there making a difference. I will link to the What Would You Do on our webpage, because that's something you should definitely check out. I had to keep pausing, and then I started thinking, well, gosh, I'm in a position where I can just pause, but he's very much not in that position. I'm going to throw some news out at you real quick, and then I will leave you to the rest of your week. But there is definitely a lot happening. Jody and I talked last week about President Obama and the White House's decision to not defend pieces of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. And unsurprisingly, House Speaker John Boehner announced last week that Congress will indeed defend the Defense of Marriage Act, saying that he believes the Obama administration overstepped its bounds by refusing to defend the law in court. He said, quote, "I will convene a meeting of the bipartisan legal advisory group for the purpose of initiating action by the House to defend this law of the United States, which was enacted by a bipartisan vote in Congress and signed by President Bill Clinton." It's like all these different ways of him saying it wasn't just the Republicans, which it wasn't. It is regrettable that the Obama administration has opened this divisive issue at a time when Americans want their leaders to focus on jobs and the challenges facing our economy. The constitutionality of this law should be determined by the courts, not by the president unilaterally, and this action by the House will ensure the matter is addressed in a manner consistent with our Constitution. So, excuse me, end quote, I should say, and now Ken talking. So, indeed, that was unsurprising. We knew that the House would attack that. They weren't going to like that. We knew it. Over in New York City, it's not a great story, but at least we're calling attention to it. The New York City Department of Education are now, they're officially saying that they have not done enough to help teachers combat bullying and harassment of students. This is what a new report concludes. The report entitled, quote, "Bullying in New York City Schools, Educators Speak Out." This report says that teachers need additional training and resources to address and ideally prevent bullying based on homophobia and other prejudices, according to an article in Edge New York. After a year of research that included a survey of 198 teachers and staff members in 117 schools, the report's authors found that only 27% have been offered training on dealing with bullying and harassment, and only 30% of students have gone through diversity training. Teachers also thought that school administrators were not committed to fighting the problem. So that's a huge problem. And there are so many great educators out there, and I feel silly because I'm not promoting myself, but sure, I'll promote myself. I'm out there. I go to different high schools. I'm speaking at a high school next week, specifically to teachers and administrators. I get a little bit frustrated when we bring in all these speakers and we put all the kids in the auditorium, and then the teachers either take a break or they go do something else, or they're grading papers or whatever they're doing while the kids are hearing an educational lecture. The teachers and the administrators are the ones that we need to start with to make a difference in schools. So if you are working there at a school, jump on over to GLSEN.org to see what materials they offer. There's the Safe Schools Bullying Kits that you can order for a school, but also, fine, hire a speaker, but don't hire them to speak to your students. Hire them to speak to the teachers and the administrators, because they are the ones who are going to have to enforce this bullying legislation. So just want to put that out there. And honestly, that about wraps it up for this week's show. Thank you to Mark Fari from the Gay Man's, the Boston Gay Man's Chorus, and to Dallas Dubois, Danny Logan, and all the great work that's going on there in New York City. Fun stuff. We're keeping it to the Northeast. We love you in other parts of the country, too. And drop us an email. This show is so gay at AOL.com. Right on thisshowissogay.com. You can subscribe to This Show Is So Gay and get it on your iTunes. It'll just update for you every week. It's just a happy moment when it automatically downloads. And of course, stroll on over to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay and you can see our hundreds of fans there and join them because they want a new friend. We want you to like us because we as sure as heck like you. And that wraps it up for me here at This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. Until next week, I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite songs. This is little Darlene Love singing Why Do Lovers Break Each Other's Heart? There's no significance behind it. It's just the kind of mood I'm in. Get out there. Go make a difference. Sing a song. Go to a concert with the Boston Gay Man's Chorus. Go see Dallas Dubois Wednesday nights at Barracuda. Make a difference. Use your voice. Use your voice. And above all else, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Why do lovers break each other's heart?